Welcome to our AJAG PD Pod, the place for discussion, debate, and learning about all things accounting. Our hosts, Ivan Tabak, Jonathan Tucker, are CPAs that have been in practice for more than 3 decades. Together, they bring varying experience and viewpoints to the table, not to mention a little humor, too. Join us as we talk through current issues and hot topics, tap into expert guest insights, and enjoy the odd walk down AJAG memory lane. Before we begin today's podcast, please note, although the educational material within the podcast has been carefully prepared, none of the persons involved in the preparation of the material accepts any legal responsibility for its contents or for any consequences arising from its use. As well, the podcast material and the references contained therein may reflect laws and practices that are subject to change. Advice regarding a particular fact or situation should always be reviewed by a qualified professional. This podcast is produced and distributed by AJAG Professional Development. For more information about AJAG or any of its offerings, please visit ajag.ca.
Welcome. This is AJAG PD Pod, Season 2, Episode 5. Today's episode is sponsored by Audit Shield from Accountancy Insurance, a solution helping CPAs across Canada turn their least recoverable time into their most recoverable. It's especially relevant now as CRA scrutiny continues to rise. Today, our guest is David Douglas from Ryan ULC. David, welcome.
Very good to meet you. Yeah.
And the topic today is SHRED, Scientific Research and Experimental Development. And it's a topic that has always been a mystery to me. I've dealt with it a few times in my practice.
Yeah, same for me.
You, but hopefully David will be able to shed some light on it and give people some ideas about what to look for, what to talk to their clients about, and maybe shake some money out of the government.
Yeah. So, and any checklists or things like that that can help people in practice just
absolutely
as they're looking at that file or talking with clients, what's coming up.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, David, why don't you just tell us a bit about your title, what you do, what your practice is, and how you help CPAs
help our clients and our CPAs.
And what else?
Yeah. Fantastic.
Deal with it.
I am a principal at Ryan ULC. I'm the Canadian practice leader for government funding, which is SHRED, green ITCs, and government grants. And I lead a team of about 100 people that are in areas of science and engineering, software design, and we help our clients to get the maximum funding from the government for their technology projects. So been in the business about 25 years now and seen a lot of changes and a lot of evolution of the program. But I think I'm very proud to say Canada has got a very strong program and is very, and the government, you know, we'll get into that a bit later, but, you know, our governments have always been very supportive of innovation through the tax credit programs and the price of entry in the OECD, and our governments have always fully supported that as a means of supporting innovation in Canada.
So that's a long way of saying,
yeah,
SHRED's here for a while.
Absolutely. You know, I think even though we have a new government, they haven't had clear signals yet, but I fully believe that it will be a mainstay of the innovation support for large and small companies going forward. Mm-hmm. So
now you're a CPA.
I am. Yeah.
So when you started out practicing, did you deal with this area at all? Is that sort
absolutely
of
not. I knew nothing about it, and it was completely by accident. I had been, you know, went through the audit process to begin with, and then I got into financial advisory, doing M&A and valuation work and that sort of thing. And then our firm had had won three major clients at in 1 week, and they needed some help. And so they said, Dave, why don't you go try this for a month and help them out and then come back and go on. And 25 years later, I'm still into it. So I just found it very, very interesting to see all the new technology that's coming out in different areas. And so even though I'm not on the science and engineering side, I've got really smart people that do that. But I've been, you know, a groupie in the technology sector and watching all this evolution of technologies over the years. So
you might be a bit biased on this, but is filing SHRED claims, is that something that as a practitioner I should be looking at doing? Or is it so specialized now that you need expertise in this?
It's pretty, it's especially on us. Yeah, we consult and we have people in all areas of science, and it's really on the technical side. The actual filing of the technical, of the quantification of that science activity is actually fairly easy. I shouldn't say that out loud.
Right.
It's not, that's not where the challenges are with it when it comes to CRA. The challenges are on the definition of eligibility for SR&ED. What constitutes a technological uncertainty? It's a language that people are unfamiliar with, and they just assume that innovation of any kind is going to be eligible for SR&ED.
Right.
And that's sort of the dirty little secret out there, is that even though it's Canada's flagship innovation program, just because you're the first to do something doesn't make it SR&ED. You have to have a gap in knowledge or an uncertainty that you're trying to overcome experimentally to get to that technical objective that you're trying to achieve. So the nugget.
And just stepping back, Ryan's across the country, right?
We are across the country, yep.
Where are you? Where's your...
My office is in Mississauga.
Okay.
And but we are in Montreal, Halifax, Vancouver, Calgary, Winnipeg.
Okay.
So,
and when we're talking about SR&ED, we should also say that we're also talking not just the federal, but also the provincial credits.
Absolutely.
Right? So, they all piggyback on.
Yeah.
And frankly, they drive me crazy because there's these different provincial credits, and it's like
that's right, and with different criteria and different integrations with your tax return. So it's complex. But it is a stack on. It uses the federal legislation in every province except PEI, and of varying rates and refundable status, but generally, our provinces are very.
And is this growing now? Are you seeing? There's so many questions that come out of this.
Yeah,
right. So
it's been pretty stable for the last 10 years. It's been a $4 billion federal program, and so that's sort of leveled off over the last 5 years. The number of claimants about 20,000 a year.
Would you say more of the claims are coming in scientific areas or on the software side, computer technology side?
Well, that's a great question. So, the title of the program is Scientific Research and Experimental Development, and high 90% of the claims are actually on the experimental development side. The other part of it being basic science and applied science, which is out there but still a fairly small part of the program. But over the last few years, the number of claims that are being filed in the software space has risen and risen and risen. When I was starting out 25 years ago, probably less than 10% of the claims were on the IT side. Now it's 63% of the claim of the projects being filed, and about 40% of the claimants filed are so what that's telling is that, you know, manufacturers out there, a lot of my manufacturing clients are now having more and more IT claims and software claims as that gets integrated with their claims. So
it's always puzzled me as in the software side. You know, what type of projects would actually qualify? You know, we built, our website, and we, put in all kinds of these fancy things, at least what we think are
chat bots or this and that.
We thought, could this possibly
be?
So what would you say if you brought it right down to like the most basic type of project that could qualify? That's something you've seen really as low level as you can as you can get an example of. What would something that would qualify?
Well, maybe I don't like to go to the negative, but describing what is not SR&ED in the software space is helpful, because if I'm developing a website, or I'm a programmer, or I'm doing an ERP system, let's say, and I hire a consultant to build an ERP system,
define ERP for
a resource planning system.
Okay.
So I'm a manufacturer, I'm building an ERP system to digitize my supply chain. And so very, very common out there. But if I'm a software developer, coding in a language that I'm comfortable with and know it's a lot of work, but I know how to get from A to B, that's not going to be Shred. But what we find is more and more it's about integrating disparate systems, different software languages, different platforms, different performance characteristics. That's where the bodies are buried for Shred, because you have to come up with novel ways to achieve the same thing. Maybe there's too much volume of data. It doesn't want to work going from a server base to a cloud based platform or integrating systems. So where there's a barrier that they have to experiment and model to get to where they want to go, that's where Shred is.
But that's never going to be sold. That manufacturer is just trying to solve a problem internally. So there isn't a sense of commercialization with this. Is that an obstacle to a claim or not?
No. In Canada, you can do internal software or external software. It doesn't matter as long as you, which is different in other countries. In some countries, they preclude internal software from being eligible for the R&D code, but in Canada, as long as you show that there's a technological uncertainty in trying to achieve what you're trying to achieve in the IT development, then you can qualify the project. And so that's taken a lot of time and a lot of tax court cases to get to, but we're getting a lot closer with what they call system uncertainty. So when disparate systems are not wanting to talk to each other and you have to evolve your way, experiment to get there, that's where the Shred is in systems development.
Now, before we started today's episode, we were talking about reforms.
Right.
Is there reforms coming? And do you think that's likely in light of the fact that the reforms that were proposed in 2024 died on the order table? Is that... Yeah, what's your...
Well, it's a great question and no definitive answer, but I've been working on CPA Canada's Shred Committee for many years, and so we've been working with the Department of Finance, and so this has been a long time in the works, and there was a fair amount of detail that came out in last fall's economic statement about what we saw favorably as a liberalization of the program. The expenditure limits went up. Capital has been reintroduced into the program, and they're opening it up. The refundable credit, the high rate refundable credit is being opened up to public companies. And that's because we're seeing a shift in the way software companies and medical technology companies are increasingly financed by venture capital, private equity, and or public companies. And so a lot of the innovation and R&D that's going on out there is in that space, but they're not able to take advantage of it.
But is that going to disadvantage the smaller companies that are trying to, because now so much of that funding is now being drained to public companies. Is that going to jeopardize?
Well, it's an entitlement program. So if the smaller companies, it's not being taken away from.
No, but there's a limit to how much money the government's putting behind this. So, I mean, if public companies.
Well, from a
Have they actually been paying out the full budgeted amount in this program.
That's the question.
Yeah. Well, because it's entitlement, if you meet the criteria for Shred in the Income Tax Act, you're going to get it. But it has been fairly stable. But it's not like they put a budget limit on that. They know approximately how much they're gonna.
I think we were saying there was like $1.9 billion
that were allocated to the incrementally to the increases to the limits and. So that was approximately. I was surprised how low that was given the liberalization, but we'll see.
I wonder too, with the trade war going on with the U.S. now, whether or not this will become even more of an important program for businesses trying to switch away from a reliance and their on what's been their past trading patterns. Now they're
Well, absolutely. It's going to be, again, I call it a price of entry to the problem of our productivity problem is without support for innovation and productivity in increases, Canada's is in a much tougher spot. So that combination of the tax credit programs with direct funding grants for digital transformation, green energy, all these sectoral programs combine to have a good portfolio of innovation support.
So what was the areas of reform in this program that was being proposed?
So the main one was the reintroduction of the capital. So if you're using capital in your R&D processes, that is now eligible. They increased the expenditure limits from $3 million a year to $4.5 million a year. So you get a little bit more runway as you're a scale. You know, if you're a scaling and you're coming out of that R&D phase and you're growing and scaling, that's where Canada really needs a lot of work is getting our smaller companies with great technology to scale to a global level. That's a well-recognized problem in Canada. So they've opened up the expenditure limits to allow more runway for those companies that are commercializing and scaling up.
I see.
Do you think that the current issues with the U.S. and Canadian companies trying to favor Canadian suppliers, et cetera. Like, I'm sure a lot of the expenditures were outsourced to U.S.
Right.
Subcontractors to do some of the work.
Yeah,
it wouldn't qualify, I presume, for
no. If you're a contractor,
because it's not foreign. But now, if they're going to be looking for domestic, contractors instead of foreign, that will have to increase the payouts.
Absolutely. The Canadian program has always excluded any consulting, any consultants that you're participating in the R&D that are from another country. You can't include those. But so that's always been a part of the program. But more importantly, they were looking at whether or not foreign companies would be able to take advantage of the credit at all. And so that was always an issue because of the what they see as the leakage of IP going to. Yeah. We didn't see any evidence of that in the fall economic statement, but that's something that the Department of Finance has always been looking at. But, you know, on the other hand, the program was designed to attract R&D to our country. So you got to be careful what you wish for, because if you exclude that, then are you really going to attract the R&D to Canada? We've got such great infrastructure for it, our universities, our talented people, engineers, scientists. You know, are they then going to have to go to the U.S. to do the R&D? So
now, do they get around that at all by, let's say, having a Canadian sub of a foreign company, or is that Canadian sub considered a foreign company for purposes
of? Yeah, for purposes of the SHRED program, it is considered foreign controlled. Okay. Yeah. And so what they're opening up in this new round, what we hope to see draft legislation this fall, is that Canadian public companies can now get an enhanced credit an enhanced refundable credit. So that would be fantastic for the whole VC space and for those smaller companies that are publicly funded or funded through private equity and venture capital, as increasingly they are.
You mentioned that things are becoming clearer over time as there's more tax court decisions that are coming down. I guess the ambiguity of these types of projects lead to court challenges. What's changing? What are you seeing any developments in terms of R&D and tax court?
We have seen several. In the last 2 years, there's been some very favorable tax court going for the taxpayer that have been very clarifying and very helpful for practitioners out there, particularly around, I mentioned the words system uncertainty. As more software gets challenged in the courts, the systems coming together and the experimental work that is necessary to achieve your objectives there has been challenged in court, because CRA will look at it and they'll drive down down to the activity level, and at the basic coding or programming doesn't look like experimentation. It looks at the lowest level, everything looks pretty routine.
Right.
But at the project level, the courts have said, okay, you can't look at it at that task level. You have to look at it at what is the overall uncertainty on the project.
Mm.
And so that's been very helpful in clarifying. Mm. There's another case called Bueller, which was they were building tractors, and this was and they were trying to scale up the engine size on a tractor, and they went through all kinds of iterations. They couldn't get it to work because the frame size was not working properly, and so all of these different disparate systems weren't working together.
Mm.
And so they went through but the CRA was looking at it at a very discrete level. Well, you know how to build the frame, you know how to build the engine, you know how to build the
you're not developing anything there.
So you're not developing anything there.
Yeah.
But because they couldn't get it to work together at that scale-up size, that represented system uncertainty. So the way things work together is equally as important. So that's been very helpful in clarifying, particularly in the software
space. But they had to take it to court.
Unfortunately, the notice of objection process is not, is a bit of a black hole right now, and has not been very clarifying, but more solid cases have got through that have been very helpful.
So does that go through the same normal evaluation process if a notice of objection is filed? How does that make its way through? Because it's shred related, is it?
Well, there's a separate directorate that looks at that in Ottawa, but they've been so far very reluctant to overturn technological uncertainties, whereas lots of that gets adjudicated at the tax court level. But at the notice of objection level, you're more likely to have success on the if there were process violations by CRA, but but not so much on the eligibility side. But where we're seeing a lot more clarity is from the tax court judges on the actual eligibility framework. The law hasn't changed, but we're getting a lot more clarity.
Right.
Now,
does Ryan assist in the filing of these objections and following it through? And
absolutely, if
going
we
to tax court if
yeah,
necessary,
we
you
can
take care of all that.
We're not lawyers, and we do have a law firm, but we have not been doing that in Canada. But we assist in the process on the engineering side, on the technical side. Absolutely, we'll help through that process, it can be complex, but there's lots of ways to resolve those disputes.
Right.
Yeah.
Today's episode was presented to us by Audit Shield from Accountancy Insurance, a solution that helps Canadian CPAs across the country transform their least chargeable time into their most recoverable time, which is particularly important now as CRA scrutiny is on the increase. I'm joined today by Jason Koenig, Head of New Partnerships here in Canada. Jason, welcome.
Thank you, Jonathan.
And tell me, Jason, what are the key areas of focus for CRA right now?
Well, first of all, we're definitely seeing an uptick this July as compared to the previous, about a 15 to 20% increase in notification letters.
Mm.
And we're able to identify these trends through real-time national claims data from our CPA partners across the country, which gives us a unique view of CRA activity in real time. So the five key areas of focus right now is professional fees, advertising and promotion expenses. GST, HST is something that we've seen throughout the year, but there's certainly an uptick right now as well as compared to last July. And also payroll and T4A audits, right? So these are the top five key areas of focus. And of course, your T1s is an area where it continues to increase after tax season and through to the end of the year.
Mm. Anything in particular stand out?
Well, vehicle class 10 is something that is also on the increase this July as compared to last July. I didn't see too much of it last July, but certainly an increase right now.
Okay. All right. And I think you had an interesting request for information.
Interesting request for information. Oh, yeah. Are you talking about the letter that we received for a claims purpose from the CRA? This is a notification letter that a CPA received. This is where the CRA was investigating federal excise tax refund on diesel fuel used to generate electricity. Mm. So the two key areas of focus or asks within that letter included proof that the diesel was actually used for electricity generation, and then, of course, evidence that the volume and purpose matched what was claimed.
Wow.
Really, what this reflects is the CRA's broader shift, you know, more toward targeting reviews powered by their data analytics and a clear usage of AI tools as well.
I'm just trying to think how they would actually tie the two together.
Right.
That's crazy. All right. Any final thoughts, Jason?
Yeah, well, I thought since today's episode focused on SHRED or is focusing on SHRED, I thought how appropriate to share a recent claim on the topic. So this is a scenario where the CPA firm submitted a two-year SHRED claim for a tech startup that they represent, where the CRA selected them for a review.
Right.
So they look specifically at technical documentation, developer interviews, and a full breakdown of eligible expenses. Now, the firm spent over 20 hours, you know, preparing responses, attending various CRA meetings. But the outcome here was that 20 hours, which amounted to just under $5,000 of their professional time, was fully covered by Audit Shield. And that way, they didn't have to go back to their client with an unexpected invoice.
Yeah, I normally think of Audit Shield covering T1s, T2s, but not at that level.
Oh,
that's a great example.
Yeah, it's the full gamut. Your personal the T1s all the way through to your full blown audits and everything in between.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
And Jason, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Jason@accountancyinsurance.ca, or just simply Google us, Audit Shield Canada, and send us a message.
Great. Well, thanks for your time today, Jason. Good to see you as always.
Pleasure.
All right. Take care, everyone. So are you finding, is CRA becoming more aggressive in terms of their audits of SHRED claims, are you finding, or is it the same?
It's been pretty stable over the last, well, besides COVID, there was less going on in COVID, as you might understand, but it's been pretty stable. There's still significant, what I'd call caprice in the way they look at certain projects that is being helped by more specialization among the CRA reviewers. So they're less geographic and more specialization based. So we're seeing a little bit more consistency on that front, and they're working hard to make that happen, I know.
What would be a red flag for an audit of a SHRED claim?
Great question. How much you claim compared to the prior year. So if you get a big spike, they might look at it. There is a random element. So, you know, the length of time since your last review. If they're doing a desk review and they don't like what they are reading, that'll trigger an audit. Okay. The proportion of materials spent to the salaried labor can be. The type of overhead you're claiming. If it's a traditional claim, those are more complicated. CRA, you know, doesn't necessarily like that because it's a different test and it's harder to. But it's for process industries. That's a big one. So there's a list of red flags. Plus, they're screening for words they don't like optimization and trial and error and things like that are what we call CRA swear words. So, so we make sure that we're using the language of SHRED rather than.
Are there any other swear words we should know?
Well, one is optimization. Okay. They don't like optimization, although there's a recent tax court case which said that optimization was okay. I'm still not sure that's clear. They don't see it. They see things like optimization and trial and error as being unsystematic. Mm. So the three criteria are technological uncertainty, systematic investigation, which is really your experimentation, and then technological advancement, which is what did you learn from it that you can take to your next next job. So those are the things that that you have to meet to qualify a program. Yeah.
Is every claim reviewed in detail? Or are there claims that just, you put the numbers in the right boxes, okay?
Well, there's a pre-screening when it goes in, and then about 25%, 25 to 30% are actually looked at by a reviewer, and about 21% of those are downscreened, and then about 9% are audited in full. Wow. And that could be anything from a financial audit to a first-time claimant review is another, more of an educational program for first-time claimants. Great program, really like it.
And then, that's where they reach out and explain to the taxpayer.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And they give some light feedback and directionally, like it, don't like it. I need to see this. And so if that feedback isn't dealt with, then you'll see a full audit next year. But if you address it and are clear on what you're claiming, how you're claiming it, then it's actually beneficial. And which is what the program was designed to do.
Do you know how many claims have actually been made in any recent years? Actual shred claims?
Yeah, it's actually about 20,000 claimants a year. Yeah, so that's been pretty steady. Wow. You would expect it to be rising, but it's been pretty steady from about the low 20,000s for the last few years. Yeah.
I wonder if it's the perception of the complexity of it, or it's just companies' minds to even think about it. That is just, I guess it's a factor of those, eh?
It does have a reputation for being challenging to get through. But like I said, it's not, I think it's much more stable than it was 10 years ago. There was a lot of aggressiveness and misunderstanding that I think has been worked out both in the professional community and with CRA. So,
and are there any limitations for us as accountants in our involvement in these claims? So, because there's engineering involved, so there's a different profession, and as well, we're working in tandem on some of these claims. Is there any areas we shouldn't be? We should know. No, that's a we can't get involved in this, or in terms of our documentation, or because
Ryan
has both engineers as well.
That's
as
right.
Accountants, right.
So. And I won't pretend I'm a CPA, CA, and I won't pretend that I can write the technology side of a software development claim. I'm just I'm a groupie, and I love to read about it, but I can't talk that language, nor can I in deep biochemistry matters. So you really have to know the science to really get that that technical report written properly. Mm. Now, lots of companies have internal resources that that are capable of doing that. Yeah. Then it's an issue of, do you want to spend the time and get to know well enough to be able to articulate that the way CRA wants to see it. From a CPA standpoint, building the costing models around it is something you can participate in. The actual filing of the T-661 with your corporate tax return is something you can get involved with as well.
Right.
On the other hand, we have a dedicated team. That's what they do all day, and so they're very effective and efficient at it. Yeah.
I guess the reason for that question, I had a claim recently, and the person who was working on it, he was a consultant, a shred claim consultant, and he said, "Well, I'm an engineer. I'm not allowed to contact or ask questions as an engineer of CRA." And I thought, I've never heard that before. Have you run across any kind of restrictions professionals have in terms of this area or not?
Well, your client has to sign an RC-59 to allow you to communicate with CRA.
Yeah. Well, he wanted me to call CRA. He said, "You know what? I'm an engineer. I'm allowed to ask these questions of CRA, but per my profession." And
I'm not aware of any any restrictions in that respect.
I was making excuses.
Right. I think he was trying to get me to do the work instead of him. So anyway, I didn't know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but
so why don't we like take it back and let's go back to the beginning of a process. So we have a client. We think maybe something might be there for you, and we send them to you. What's your intake process of a new client, and how would you take them through the process and
great question.
The services you offer and your fee structure?
Well, we're very focused on process. We love to be working in real time with our clients when those projects are happening during the year, so that you're not trying to look back. Mm. You're allowed to claim up to 18 months after the fiscal year end, but your memories get pretty short going back 2.5 years to look at the activities that were occurring. So that's a challenge, and getting the documentation right. So we really like to start by doing an education program for our clients, explain what the program is all about, get everybody level set and what kinds of projects are eligible and not, and then get people talking about their short list of projects so that we can kick around what are the edges of the scope of eligibility on that project. So that really gets people talking, gets people identifying other projects that might be applicable, and sort of level sets everybody on the program. Then we get the project list, and then we ensure that people are tracking time and documentation, and not overwhelming amounts of evidence, but you need key pieces of evidence to prove what you were doing. Mm. So that can be done so much more efficiently
How is that done? Is that done on your platform, or is it done internally? You're reviewing it, because
it depends. Now, we have free software that we give to our clients if they want that, but the last thing technical people want is to duplicate systems and be entering time here, and everywhere. So if they're a software company and they're using Jira or GitHub or other development programs, then we'll work with that and help them to tweak it. And by the way, tweak is another swear word. Can't do that.
All right.
But we'll help them develop the narratives on the descriptions of the activity in their systems on the tags. In Jira, you have tickets for the development of different aspects of the platform. So if you provide more narrative about how it applies to Shred and what you were doing, then that's the A plan for demonstrating that the activity is eligible. So we'll help companies.
And would you be looking at as the client's going there? They've got a big project and they're going through the year doing this. Are you checking in, or you're basically saying to them, okay, here's what you have to document? You get to the end of the year, you're looking at this claim and you think the documentation's not very good.
We like to come in quarterly.
Okay.
If we, let's say it's a December year end and we file in June, then we'll come out in the summer for the next year and get them set up for where they've come to in that year. Then we'll come in the fall as well.
Okay.
And then there's no reason why the technical work and the technical projects can't be updated in real time. You have to wait till the year end to get the costing done. But
you just want to make sure that documentation is being compiled,
because that's the guts. The financial is going to fall out of the scope of the project and the activity. So
that example was one where somebody came to you saying, we are planning on doing this and this. Will it qualify? What do we have to do?
Correct.
Yeah. Now, what if somebody comes to you and say, we've been doing this and this and this?
Yeah.
Does it qualify?
Yeah.
And now we have to look back.
Right.
To start.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So we do that too. And but it ups the ante in terms of looking at the evidence and looking at the risk of the claim and how to position it properly looking back. So it's totally legitimate. But it's just harder to get the maximum out of the project, but also to defend it if there's little or no information. So we don't like to do that if there's no If there's no evidence, then we can't file it.
Right.
But yeah.
So how do you charge for your services?
So most of the time we are on a contingent basis where we'll charge a percentage of what we get back. But we have all sorts of, we have coaching relationships where we'll look at what a company with an internal shred department will do, and we'll do a second pass on it or give advice and help them to scope out the beginning. That's a big one for larger companies that have a dedicated staff. I mean, one of the challenges with companies that have a dedicated R&D person is that they don't see 1,000 projects a year like we do, so they're not as attuned on how to scope that. But there's a lot of work to be done, so that's a very legitimate function, and so we'll help with that, and we'll charge by the hour. We can charge by the project as well. So let's say you just want the engineering work, the technical report's done, so we can charge by the report. You know, that's a CPA that is doing the costing and tax work, but hiring out the technical work, that's something we do as well.
The fact that you're on a contingent basis on some of these, because there's a box on the form saying how were you remunerated.
We disclose that.
Is that a flag at all or not for claims?
Well, there was a lot of discussion about this when the Part 9, which discloses our relationship and our contingent relationship or not. So they took a look at that and fully expecting to do the analytics and to find that was driving bad behavior, and it didn't, they didn't find that evidence, that smoking gun, that contingency was, so they've continued allowing contingent relationships. It's just the way that the industry has
evolved,
because it was, you know, we do a lot of contingency work on the sales tax side, on the property tax side, where it truly is found money, where but in the shred world, it's a much more mature business. We have a pretty good idea of what we're looking at and the eligibility framework. So it's not, it's not ideally a contingent based business.
Yeah.
But it's just evolved that way.
Yeah, it's the nature of it.
Yeah.
So this might be a dumb question, but does any part of the service that you provide qualify as shred?
No.
I mean, just like discussing or helping them with their process or organizing it or getting into it. I'm just.
Yeah. I mean, well, is it part of the germ of the idea? Yeah. Because somebody comes to you and says, all right, well, can we retain you for a couple hours just to discuss something we're thinking about? I mean, that is part of the cost of potentially.
Well, project. What you can claim under, documentation and planning are things that under the traditional method are eligible activities. Planning R&D and documenting R&D are eligible activities. Now, if you're claiming under the proxy method, which is the 55% of your dollar of labor, that's included in the proxy. But if you're claiming traditional, then you can claim that. So
my experience has only ever been with the proxy method.
Yeah. Most people,
done these, it was always.
Yeah. Proxy. So, traditional is when you have, there's two main process industries where you have very big processes like a craft paper mill or a steel mill or an oil refinery. Those are low labor and very high energy inputs. So those are our traditional claims. Or I'm a software firm that doesn't have any salaries because we're just starting up, but there's other costs that you want to claim. So those will be a traditional claim as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Or then as we were talking about, I've got some clients who are in the healthcare space who are doing research.
Yeah.
And it's a very simple claim. I mean, the documentation is contained within the questions themselves on the form. There's no report afterwards. That's again another.
Right.
Does that fall in the same category as what you're describing in these others, or is say the healthcare space, which many of our viewers would probably mm-hmm. be familiar with seeing these for doctors, for example, who are involved in some of their research work. They're authoring papers or co-authoring papers.
Right.
So same kind of claim, or is that a different?
Well, it falls under the same process, but it's a little bit simpler in that, like 90% of the claims out there are what we call experimental development. But there's actually four levels of eligibility. One is basic research, and so some of the doctors could be doing basic research. Applied research is the second area.
And what's the difference? Basic versus applied.
Well, basic research is you know, the fundamental physics or biochemistry. Mm-hmm. Applied research is I've got a concept of what to do with that research, a new product or process, and then the experimental development is how do I develop engineer a new product or process or make incremental improvements to those products or processes.
Where I'm seeing it is more in terms of how patients are treated, the treatment of patients.
Right.
And so then
the clinical.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And so they'll kind of collaborate together and conduct their own study, I guess, amongst themselves.
Yeah. And so that could be experimental development or it could be applied science.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so those are very eligible.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about AI. Everybody's talking about AI now. So how is that affecting claims? Like, are you seeing now people saying, okay, I'd really like to be able to develop this because I could see a use using AI?
So
is that, is it too early to be seeing those types of claims? Is that
No, we're seeing a lot. We're seeing a lot of it, but there's a lot of misconceptions out there.
Like,
because everybody thinks that just because they're using AI, that it qualifies for Shred, or that they're using that tool.
Yeah.
Then that doesn't by itself qualify it.
So an LLM will not necessarily qualify for a language learning model won't qualify.
That's right, because you have to be doing something to the technology, not with the technology. So just because you're using an AI tool doesn't mean that it's experimental or that you're overcoming that technological hurdle. So it may look like experimentation, but there's no uncertainty that you're overcoming with it. But if you're using it and you're trying to
get at something,
get at something with AI and experimenting or compile data to use in a certain way, and you've got performance issues with that data that you're applying the tool to get a certain outcome, that's when you can claim Shred.
Can you give us a couple of examples of what that would look like?
Well, let's say I have an operating system on a manufacturing floor, and I'm taking that data and I'm having AI learn about the effectiveness and efficiencies and timing and all of those aspects. And if you're using AI to improve the process outcomes, then that's something that I would look like as having uncertainty related to it, because you'd have to measure, whether it in fact was achieving the outcomes you expected, and whether that data was accurate. There's all kinds of hallucinations going on right now with AI, those kinds of things are so if you're using that to further your understanding of your own products or processes, that's something that has a knowledge outcome that qualifies an advancement. But
you're in the same business we are as a firm, right? I'm sure there's firms out there that are thinking, how can we incorporate AI into our processes in files,
right?
Whether it's tax, whether it's the doing year-end work or completing some of those checklists that we've now got to complete for for all of our engagements. Is there a sense of opportunity there for claims by looking across our client profiles or things like that with AI? or not? What are you seeing? Is it early days for this for accounting firms or not?
Yeah, for accounting firms, it's...
Or what should they be thinking about maybe?
Well, if they're, let's say, hiring somebody to that in the software space to, yeah. to help with that, yeah. then there could be a claim there. If there is some reason why the there's a gap in knowledge in achieving what you're trying to achieve yeah. and forcing the software developer to start experimenting. Yeah. So is there a reason why the data is not being is not able to be used in the way that you need to get an accurate outcome.
Yeah.
So
or efficiency.
Or efficiency. That's right. Mm-hmm. But we find it very useful when we're doing technical interviews to be able to condense and have a build a persona around. I'm a medical doctor, or I'm in the software space, or I'm in the manufacturing space. And that helps to compile the scaffolding of a technical report. We don't use it to write the technical report, but to get all that information into the right bucket. So
why don't you use it to write the technical report?
Well, because there is significant, you'd have to fact check every line, and it is, CRA is on the lookout for and has mechanisms for picking up on when technical reports have been written by AI. There's a lot of fraud out there, so CRA, so we have to be very careful. You can use it, yep. but you have to be so careful.
You've got to be on top of the
output. You've got to be completely on top
of the output.
Every line, there are hallucinations, yeah. and it does. But it does help us to be much more efficient with yeah. people's time, our own and our clients. So, you must be using it on... on Zoom AI does wonderful summaries of your meetings.
Yeah, and confidentiality is always a concern, right?
That's right. And we have enterprise versions of ChatGPT, yeah. which make it...
And people should be aware of that, too.
That's right. You cannot use public...
using ChatGPT if you don't have the right type of license.
Absolutely.
All that stuff you're putting out there is...
it's going into you're training the public yeah. model using private data. And yeah. there's been many, many examples of lawsuits and really bad things happening. Yeah. Yeah.
So is CRA using yeah. AI in any way that you're aware of at this point to maybe review some of these claims? Would they take your documentation?
They won't be very specific about that, but they do have program.
Everybody's using it. At this point.
Well, I remember being in the day that ChatGPT was released, I was in a meeting with the leaders of the CRA SHRED program, and we were all looking at, how is this going to apply But now, all the CRA reviewers will use ChatGPT to look up what the state of the art is in an industry before they look at the technical report. So everybody's using it, but you have to be so careful with both the data and the output.
Absolutely. Administratively, best practices around using AI and you've talked a little bit in terms of compiling information and things like that. Even there, you have to be careful. But talk to us a little bit about what your approach is to documenting and claims and using AI and how viewers should be thinking about this.
Well, one of the things we're doing is a lot more use of it for data extraction. So if you've got large volumes of either time data, project data, then we can do certain interpolations of, so we'll download the entire database of Jira from a software company, and then we'll look at where the time was spent relative to our interpretation of the R&D and and it will actually derive the time spent on the SHRED-defined project, not the entire project.
Well, you've mentioned a couple of times Jira. For those not familiar,
it is one of the there are some Software development firms track their development work in certain types of programs. There's about five or six of them that are used by most firms. And so we'll extract that data. We also extract timesheet data. I'm a large engineering company. I've got X number of projects, and we'll extract that data, and then we'll use AI to
to put you on the spot, but for those watching who are dealing with their clients not familiar with platforms like Jura, you said that there's four or five ones that are prevalent. What are those? Because if they come up with a client and somebody mentions, "Oh, we're using Jura," we wouldn't otherwise know.
Yeah. So GitHub is another one. Okay. Confluence. Those are the main, and GitHub, and there's a few more. I can't remember the names.
Those are the bigger ones. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
But they all are pretty much the same. So if there's a, so we're able to, from any of those time-based systems or ticket-based systems, we're able to extract that and use that data to help to come up with a much more defensible position on the claim.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Yeah. Does AI help the defensibility of claims?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because now you get access to all this.
It's that glue between what you're articulating as the technological uncertainty and the activity that was actually performed.
Yeah.
And that's the nugget, really, is you've got to have that connection. Otherwise, it's outside of the scope of the SHRED project.
Yeah. Your exposure to AI is different than my exposure. We're all kind of feeling our way forward with this new technology as it encroaches on us.
Just have to jump in and experiment.
Yeah, carefully.
Carefully.
Carefully. Yeah. Is it going to replace? Is AI going to replace the preparer of SHRED claims or not?
I don't believe we're going to see that anytime soon. I think it's going to. It's particularly articulation of what that technological uncertainty is. You can get a lot of information summarized really, really quickly with like in seconds.
Yeah.
But identifying that nugget of uncertainty is much more interpretive than we're seeing right now. So we'll move the needle on it.
Yeah.
And we'll have a lot more tools and agents that are able to ask the right question in the right persona. Persona basis is something that we're looking at. So I'm a financial professional, or I'm a medical professional.
Right.
So using that language, and you can train the models to ask the right questions in that persona.
I take it the needle would be another phrase you wouldn't want to put into SHRED plane.
That is correct. That would be in our.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else come to mind?
Yeah.
Just wondering if you have any good horror stories to tell us about claims, maybe approved, reassessed, re-reviewed. People always love. I love to hear
horror stories. Yeah.
Well, you know, there are some fraudulent stories that I've heard from CRA that are, you know, people have been just having AI make up stories about potential product development. And that's why they're on the lookout, and why I have to be so careful, is because there was a huge amount of fraud early on when ChatGPT just came out, there was a huge amount of fraud.
Yeah, you can see that, right? I mean, I can see
that. And that's not good for the industry. It's not good for claimants. It's not good for anybody. Yeah. So,
have you had any, or has Ryan had any clients who were trying to put one over on you with fraudulent claims
we have covered lots of clients want to push the envelope on it, and we have serious discussions about what the you know, we will not file anything that is don't believe in. Different clients have very different risk appetites, and the the more that you can document the evidence behind a claim, the more you can push the edges of the supporting activity that went in against that technological uncertainty that you're. So that another reason that good solid evidence-based documentation is very, very helpful to maximizing what you can get back from the program.
And but, you mentioned you won't file. What does Ryan file? With CRA, like, you know, supposing I've got a client who's got a claim, I'm filing the T2. Mm-hmm. Right? What are you filing?
Well, typically they will take that tax prep for we will fill in the T661, Schedule 31. We'll do the adjustments to Schedule 1, and we'll give it back to the service provider.
I see.
To the accountant.
Yeah.
If the client wants us, if it's an amendment, we'll do it ourselves, or work with the service provider.
Okay.
Sometimes clients get double charged for it if there's an amendment.
Yeah.
And, we'll charge them, and then you'll charge them for the filing, which they don't always want. So we can do the filings. That's not an issue.
But that's usually not typical. It would normally.
It usually goes to the service provider.
Yeah. Okay.
And sometimes that service provider is us. We do have a corporate tax group that does a lot of filings, and sometimes we're doing that anyway.
Right.
So if you're current and on top of it, we usually get that tax prep file, fill in all the forms, and do all the costing, all of the technical work, fill in all the forms.
But you're not doing a year-end file, for example, for a client. Am I right? Okay. That's not the.
Yeah. We don't do any attest functions, but we do anything tax.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, David, thank you for your time today. This has been very helpful.
Great. Thank you.
Appreciate your insights into this this world that we don't always spend a lot of time in, and you do. So.
Well, I'm still trying to explain to my 20-year-old kids what I do. It's fun.
Well, let them watch this video. Maybe
that's right.
This podcast. So.
Yeah.
Thanks again. And thanks, everybody, for watching. Please make sure to like and subscribe to our channel. And we hope to see you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care.